Galio, and yet you sit here, you're a former winner of this race, but do you feel like you come in under the radar almost in a way? Nobody's focusing on you.
I don't know. You tell me. I just sat down, so I'll let him come over.
What are the emotions like, though, coming in since you won this race compared to maybe what they were coming to this racetrack before you won in 2022?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's clearly a special place for me, I think, for a number of reasons. But, I think my emotions, going into 2022 is that I thought the coolest Daytona 500 memory I was going to have for quite a while was in my first one being pushed out to the lead in tandem draft with Joey, and obviously then the next year you win it. So you kind of have to reevaluate those memories. But it's certainly a huge event for the year. It still always feels like the first day of school, kind of above everything else. But by the time that wears off as the week goes on, by Sunday on race day, it's by far the biggest day in our sport.
Such a good job of controlling this race over the past 5, 6, 7 years. Why is that?
Well, I think you can sit here and say there's so much you can't control, but there's also so much that you can control, and I feel like as a team and as an OEM, we do a very good job of that.
Austin, what's it going to feel like for you to race the Daytona 500 with Elio, your childhood idol, in the field?
Super cool for me. I mean, he's definitely one of my racing heroes, and you don't get to really meet those people much, in life. Obviously a very unique relationship for me and him. And I've raced in races with him before, with the Rolex and things like that. Same class once, but this is definitely on another level, no doubt, just with how big this race is in our sport. I mean, Rolex means a great deal to me, but with this kind of being my full-time thing and him coming over, I'd love nothing more than having a victory lane picture with one of the two of us holding that trophy up. But I saw him this morning and we laughed. I called him Wendy. So he asked me if I wanted some fries. So, yeah, I'm excited to have him here.
How do you think he'll adapt to this style of racing?
I think that's a great question. I mean, he's got IROC experience. He's done drafting tracks. I mean, obviously nothing recent and probably nothing that's this close and tight for that long. But I'm excited to get his take on everything, but it's definitely a different world for sure.
Different manufacturer, but would you be tempted to give him a push or anything?
Who am I pushing him past?
I don't know. There's so many hypotheticals.
Oh, I know. You're asking me a very hypothetical question.
Correct hypothetical.
If I'm not pushing him past, if I'm honestly, he's not a points earning car, so it's not taking away a playoff spot. And as long as I'm not pushing him past a Ford or a teammate, we're sign me up. I'm your guy.
All right, thank you.
On the Xfinity bonus point for the fastest lap. So, do you feel like it could alter strategies on road courses or super speedways where guys might get hit for fresher tires?
Well, you get 1 point for every spot, so you're basically promoting yourself one position, from a points perspective. So, I think the bonus point definitely plays way more, in the playoffs than it would probably a regular season. But, if you're left out there with nothing left to do in the race, if you got some damage, if you've gone back to the garage and fixed your car, why not go try and get one more point? That does seem to matter, as we go down here, or maybe even fighting for regular season championship or positions in the regular season to stack yourself up for the playoffs. So not saying that it doesn't matter, but it'll definitely carry a lot more weight once you get into the playoffs. Well, I mean, the fuel is important. The strategy of how you go through the pack is important. Pit stops, race strategy. There's quite a lot of small details that go down into what make these races what they are. I mean, the one things you can't control are the wrecks in those races, but where you end up in the pack before those happen are certainly in your control.
Is it frustrating at all as a driver when you know over the past couple of years at some point you're going to have to go in that fuel-saving mode and just ride for a while instead of being able to push?
Yes and no. It's a different race. I think that's the only way you got to look at it. Is it's a different part of the race, and it's a different way to separate yourself.
What mindset do you carry into the 2025 season, and how does it differ from past seasons?
Honestly, I'm super energized. I've never really felt this excited about a race season probably ever in my career. Just from the standpoint of I know who I'm working with very well. I feel very confident that we have all the right pieces to go out and be a successful race team. And myself as a driver, you know, it's my fourth year in the series. You know, it ties how long I've ever stayed in the racing series, you know, in my career. So I feel very confident in what I need out of my car, you know, how to race in the series, you know, the guys that I'm racing, you know, I don't want to use the word comfort because I feel like that is tied with complacency in this industry, but I feel very comfortable with where I'm at and what it's going to take to be the best. And I know what those things are, and I feel confident we can do those things.
How much of that stems from the speed that you guys were able to show throughout the playoffs at the end of last season to carry into the offseason?
I think our playoff run definitely, you know, reaffirms, you know, how I feel about that. I don't think it changes, but I think I've always felt, you know, from the beginning of last year to the tail end of last year that was possible. It's just you have to commit to the part and to have that process result in that type of speed and that level of potential. I didn't want the season to end last year just because of where we're at, but I feel really refreshed and energized and ready to go.
Mm-hmm. First couple of races we broadcast this year coming up, Atlanta, COTA. How do you feel about the racing in Atlanta now? I've done this for 40-plus years, and I tell people now, you have to go there because that's 1.5-mile racing that never been seen before.
Well, and I think every Atlanta race we've done since the repave has looked different each time. So I can't sit here and confidently tell you that I know exactly what the race is going to look like. I mean, yeah, from a generalization, yeah, it's going to be a drafting style race, no doubt, and handling is going to be somewhat important. But to the levels of which and how it changes the racing, you know, I think it's been an unknown each time, which has been fun to kind of react and adapt on the fly and understand what your car is going to need as the race goes on, and hopefully you have enough time to work on it and do those things and have that opportunity. But it's been an exciting race, no doubt, and I think the only one that I didn't leave either with a smile on my face or, you know, wanting to go back and do it again was the first one. So past that, they've been pretty exciting events for me.
How different are they from other 1.5-mile tracks? How would you tell a fan how different
that is? Well, I think what really separates it is it's not like you're going to lose the draft at Atlanta. You know, I think the only reason you're further back is if you have handling issues and have to start lifting more. And that's the thing that maybe you look at it and go, oh, this looks exactly like a super speedway, but the only guy that's probably not lifting is the leader. And there's a lot of how you manage yourself and how you manage lanes and how you manage your position on the track, you know, when you're in really one car's worth of traffic. You know, so I think there's a lot more going on behind the scenes for the drivers and for the spotters and the teams than kind of what really meets it, because it's really easy to associate it with the racing we do at Daytona and Talladega, which is, you know, full throttle, you know, only reason you're lifting is to not hit the car in front of you, whereas, you know, the handling element plays a much bigger role than I feel like what you're able to tell.
At COTA, they've changed. We're going to the smaller circuit. What's your thoughts on changing the course at COTA?
Well, I think it specializes the track a little bit more with making it smaller. It, you know, just from a numbers standpoint, when you reduce the numbers of corners on the racetrack, the corners that exist now have a heightened importance. You know, whereas there's a corner that I might not have sacrificed setup items on or passing zones or so on that are now much more important because they are a higher percentage of the lap. Just from a numbers standpoint, you know, it does change things. And, you know, I can't say with certainty, you know, what those corners are exactly going to be and how important they're going to be till we get there. You know, there's been some paving that's been done as well. So there's going to be a bit of a learning curve there. But it's definitely going to change the race for sure.
Outside of racing.
Well, it definitely is cool. I mean, I'm glad he's in a position that he can trust me, but at the same time, you know, I do feel like he's definitely in a position with teammates that are very experienced with Ross and Daniel and a team that should be able to tell him how to get around and do this and make this race. But He and I have spoken, you know, probably in the past couple of years, kind of more generalizing about this race and the challenges and what it takes to be, you know, in a competitive situation at this race. So I'm excited to have him here, excited to see him in a car that's definitely capable of winning the race, and certainly looking forward to racing against him.
Outside of racing question for a second, a lot of people I know that you played the tuba growing up. Do you still pick up an instrument at all from time to time, or is there a hobby that you have these days?
Semi-retired.
What other instruments do you play?
Piano? No, I've thought about picking up piano just because it's a much easier thing. Like, they have those ones where you can like it's almost like Guitar Hero. Like, yeah. You kind of follow. Like, I've seen some of those advertised. Like, I've thought about that. But yeah, no wind instruments have been in my house since I moved out of my parents' house. No, I'm definitely not a flute guy. No, that ain't the deal.
So, if you could explain to the fans, as good as you are at what you do, what's the hardest part of racing the Daytona 500? Is it, you know, the buildup is big, I know that. You're a relatively young driver. What would you explain to the fans is like the really hard part that maybe unless you were in it, you wouldn't figure it out?
Well, I think it's positioning yourself for the end of the race. And I think that can be interpreted a lot of ways. I think the first thing you think of when you hear that is, oh, well, that means the first half of the race doesn't matter. Positioning yourself happens tonight in qualifying. We can sit on the front row, get a pit stall we want. That opens up huge options. So that's one way to position yourself. Other ways, through the duels, you know, you get points as well that happen to affect the regular season, and your starting position, and your pit stall selection. So the next two nights are very important for positioning yourself and giving yourself a higher percentage chance of being successful and having better options in the race. And then as the race goes on, you know, strategy, decisions in the pack, all those things, you know, learning about your car, learning the different factors that are maybe, you know, maybe not the same as the last Daytona 500, or maybe not the same as your experience, or maybe you're a rookie driver and you've never experienced any of these things and you're learning, but there's a constant learning period that goes on throughout the race all the way up until the end. And whoever is able to execute that well enough is going to have a chance to be positioned. Now, I say positioning is the most important because you're talking to a guy that's gotten wrecked out of the lead three of the last super speedway races I've run. So there's certainly an element to this that you have to just survive. But I'd much rather have my heart broken and a broken race car than just a broken race car.
How do you not agonize over decisions? Commit when you make your moves. Be smart in what you've been told, the meetings that you have, and let it not stick in your brain so that you're overthinking it.
You just defined what it takes to be good at my job. So I'd like to think that I do well at that, you know, for the most part on these races, you know, especially when it comes to being decisive and knowing the moves that you need to make. But, past that, you know, being open-minded at the same time, not being too committed to one value or idea because factors and conditions do change. Well, there's definitely a social element in it. I think, you know, winning certainly doesn't hurt, but I think the consistency of being up at the front of the field, and having that almost subconscious, okay, that car, I'm used to associating that car, that number with being up front. Forget the driver and the car, but, you know, okay, it's going to make a move. All right, I'm going to go with that car because it's usually at the front. I'll use Kyle Busch as an example. You know, since this generation of car, I feel like he's been a resident member of the top five, top ten, you know, in every single plate race. I'd like to think of myself as the same. So that's a car that you'd look at and associate with being up front. And the more you can associate yourself with that, I think the better chances you have at being able to maneuver through the pack.
What are the memories that come from your first Cup start when I was here? What stands out from you?
I think of three things. One, trying to make the race as an open car, which was very, very close to not happening. I'd say the second was a very, like, planned effort on a restart, take the lead with Joey Logano pushing me, tandem draft. It was the coolest thing ever. I had a smile on my face, like, very cool experience. And the last one, you already wrecked out, dude. I got to use the spotter. How about that? You're talking about my first Cup race here. I was fortunate that Ryan wrecked very early, that I got to use the spotter. Yeah, Ryan was already home by the time the race restarted. But yeah, I'd say the negative memory was leading the Fords down pit road on the correct strategy, and we fumbled the pit stop one way or the other. I think all of us are kind of to blame on that, and then pretty much coming out, losing the draft, and being irrelevant until we got in the big fireball wreck. So I'd say those are the three things that that are really the highlights for me.
Obviously, the Toyotas have their share of good drivers, but in the past, one of the things with Speedway Racing's talked about is they don't necessarily have the numbers, and that if they lose a couple cars early, that it's harder for them to kind of do their own thing. They have a few more cars here this year now, so if they lose a couple, maybe it still makes them potentially a player. How does that change with them having a little bit more numbers, or what do you have to be aware of in terms of?
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point. You know, I haven't done the math, but I wouldn't be surprised if Toyota probably has maybe even more cars than Ford does. It could be very close, but with more cooks in the kitchen, you know, that makes decisions, you know, sometimes more challenging, and obviously gives more numbers to make decisions and be flexible. So I think, you know, the last 2 years has probably been a new experience for them as an OEM on how to manage that. I'm not going to tell you there's a right way or the wrong way, but I would say with this generation of car, I wouldn't say it's as critical as maybe past generations of cars to have that many numbers, just because track position, you know, means more than it has in the past, and how to establish that. So from that standpoint, I don't see it as a threat, no.
But isn't it still a factor in terms of pitting? Because typically the manufacturers pit with each other, and it at least to get the field getting strung out, and there's 10 cars going in a line as opposed to 6.
10 could also slow each other down more, too. So is it 10 good cars, or is it just 10 cars, right? So I feel like there's a lot of factors that do play into that. You know, I think, you know, if you're able to come out of pit road and have 10 cars in a line, you know, it's going to be harder to weave your way through 10 cars. So I think there's an advantage to that if done correctly. But also, if one of those 10 cars spins out on pit road, you know, because they're all stacked up on top of each other, there's a negative. So I think there's equal positives and negatives to having more numbers, and how you strategize that, I think, is kind of depends on, you know, the abilities and the strength of those cars and drivers.
How big a goal was that to be at Steak and Shake Sunday night after the race?
Well, that's a good place to start. So I don't really plan those things, but yeah, I think it'd be good to repeat.
Yeah. Also, the fact that your dad now, I guess, can be a racing dad now, that at least he's not the overall president of Team Penske. So what was your reaction to that, and what's it been like with him being able to maybe slow down a little bit?
Yeah, obviously his role within the team changes, but I don't think his separation of church and state has been pretty strong, so I don't think any of that changes. I found out at the same time the rest of the drivers found out, you know, in a meeting with him and Roger and everyone else. So from that standpoint, I feel like it actually, in a funny enough way, it probably changes less for me than it does for the other guys, as far as who to go to and what resources you have, you know, within the team. You know, for me, those points of contact are all really the same, you know, from a NASCAR program perspective. So past that, it's business as usual. I have a ton of confidence, and I feel like in a lot of ways it's a huge compliment to the current leadership that we have at the team, that, you know, I don't think he would step away from that role without knowing that they were, you know, ready to go. So for us, it's definitely business as usual.
Last year, frustrating was last year's slate of Super Speedway races, given that you were consistently in a position to win at the end, but things would always kind of go against you. 500 last year, in a position to win, coming to a white flag, get wrecked. August race, racing for a win, get wrecked. Talladega leading in position to win, get wrecked, biggest wreck in NASCAR history. Is that just, you know, Super Speedway racing some breaks, or is that kind of stuck in your craw?
I mean, I do definitely believe in the law of averages when it comes to speedway racing, and I would never take away a position to lead a race and have a shot to win. So from that perspective, I would much rather have a broken race car and a broken heart than just a broken race car, because if a wreck starts and you're behind it, good chance you're getting in it too. So I might as well be the one getting turned. I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, it's something we look at as a team. You know, are the things that we can do with our cars, you know, are the things that I can do to position myself better, or is that just racing? So from that perspective, of course it's frustrating, but you know, I don't look at anyone owing me anything or any racetracks owing me anything. It's just, you know, it's hard to put yourself in that position time and time again, and I think that's what would make things frustrating. But past that, comes with the territory.
You mentioned earlier, like, positioning yourself starts tonight with qualifying. Obviously, Ford was dominant last year on Super Speedway, so how do you feel about tonight?
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think. I mean, not a whole lot's changed, you know, from our end. You know, certainly look to, you know, have that be the case tonight. I can't sit here and guarantee it. I think as a team, as a company, as an OEM, we should feel confident going into tonight and into these super speedway races, because they have been strengths of ours, and I see that not changing.
Thank you. The running joke is with a lot of people is you don't love super speedways until you win at one, and then you can kind of reconsider. Stenhouse was saying that, you know, even before 2017-18 that he did not like super speedways at all. Now it's like, okay, now we've won here a few times. I like it. Did that change at all for you in 2022 when you won the Daytona 500? Do you now look at these years and be like, okay, like, you know, obviously you come in here as a Daytona 500 winner. I know that's a great feeling for you. But has anything changed on the super speedways, you know, being up front as well during the race?
I definitely hated my first couple that I did in Trucks Xfinity because I just didn't understand it. But even before I won my first Xfinity plate race, like there's a different skill set to it, and it's kind of a break in the schedule as far as, you know, the way you prepare. I think that is fun enough, but when you start to realize, you know, the small details that do make a difference, and then when they do, it just reaffirms, you know, the preparation you're required to be successful at these types of races, or at least consistently successful or run consistently well. So from that standpoint, yeah, winning the race certainly helps, you know, kind of back up, you know, the importance that you put on, you know, that work that does matter. But I don't think it necessarily changes whether or not if I enjoy doing it.
Easy, fun one.
What do you got?
With the 50th anniversary this weekend, who is your favorite Saturday Night Live actor or actress?
Dude, I don't even know.
Will Ferrell, Adam Sandler, any of them? Ring a bell?
I mean, other than what?
Pete Davidson.
Dude, I don't think I've ever watched Saturday Night Live.
That's fair.
Not once.
No,
I would love to give you an answer, but
no,
I got nothing.
I asked Noah the same thing. He's like, I've never watched it. I'm like, why are you so excited?
When is it even on?
It's Saturday
night.
Live.
That's a dumb, really dumb question.
Yeah.
Saturday night.
Well, I asked Noah, and he's like, I'd never watched it. I'm like, why were you so excited to meet Pete Davidson last year? He's like, I love his comedy. I'm like, but you never watched him on Saturday Night Live.
Why don't I associate those guys with
yeah.
the show?
I just
a good.
I was like, all right, fair.
Yeah.
I guess you just watch the stand-up.
Yeah, fair enough.
Oh. I tried.
It's all right. Someone will get it.
So I got a couple.
Someone will get it. Come on in.
So you're a former winner here, but it was so early in your career, rookie year, first full-time year. Do you feel like you're at more of an advantage now that you have some more experience with more super speedway racing ever since coming?
Well, I think as Daytona 500 is concerned, in this style of racing, you know, I think the game has evolved a lot since 2022, since really the first speedway race of the next gen car. You know, a lot's changed, and you know, I feel like in some ways we did a good job at already getting a little bit ahead of the curve on what those things might be. But past that, you know, I think the skill set required to be successful, you know, in that first race is kind of the baseline level of participating, you know, in this race. So, you know, do I feel like I've kept up with that curve somewhat well? Yeah, but you know, it's definitely a challenge each time, and there's always new challenges that kind of come up as racing is. So, you know, I think the same driver that won that race probably isn't going to be able to win this race.
With how you prepared for it being your rookie year when you did win it, are you training, preparing the same and or differently
I'd say using the same baseline methods, but certainly more refined and advanced. You know, we didn't have much to go off of or much to prepare off of other than, you know, maybe common knowledge of speedway racing and then being adaptable from there on out, even things that we had to do in the race to be adaptable in 2022, like I said before, are now things that are very commonplace, you know, in kind of our tendencies at this style of race and what you value is important or maybe not important. So from that standpoint, it's just a different game.
And final question. So the last 3 years, Penske's won the championship. You've proven yourself a winner with it multiple times. What is it that you can do this year to take that next step to get a multi-win season and possibly make it to the final four?
I think it's just that. It's consistent performance, you know, at a high level. You know, I feel like there's been several times, plenty of times that I feel like me, myself, the race team, whatever else, two car, you know, we've been able to perform at a high level and been able to win because of it. But we need to do that on, you know, a much more consistent basis. And I think as a team, we're starting to get able to do that by the end of the last season. And I think that's what it's going to take to contend for multiple race wins throughout a year and a championship four spot.
Thank you.